Don't mess with the best, man, because the best don't mess.
It's time to talk.
Your thoughts.
I do genuinely think it does chat with the parents.
For me, he was the bridge between myself and my untapped potential.
Flattery will get you nowhere in here.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I couldn't even answer her because, you know what, she wasn't wrong.
The voice of Cork.
And it's coming up on 8 minutes past nine. Good morning from the Neil Prendeville Show. This is Mick Mulcahy. And as we do this hour, at this time every morning, we have a round robin of the morning papers. And making all of the morning papers today is Sean McGovern. Sean McGovern winked at a family as he calmly walked out of the court, flanked by prison officers, winked at his own family. Apparently, he was playing Sudoku and reading a novel, fairly disinterested in court proceedings as things moved along. But if he was bothered by a 24-year sentence for directing the activities of the Kinahan Organised Crime Group, he didn't really show it. The term imposed by the Special Criminal Court related to the murder of Noel Kirwan. Murder wink, says the Star today. It's the big headline on page one. He was described as a smirking mobster. Sean McGovern had the grin wiped off his face, says the Star, yesterday, though, as he was caged for 24 years for plotting murders, but still managing that wink that seemed to have been caught by everybody in the courtroom. The Echo is telling us that despite free money on offer, there's been very slow take-up as shop grants fall flat. Now, these are grants that were available for people to do up their businesses in the city, and the uptake for essentially improving shop fronts on Patrick Street has been disappointing, according to Cork City Council. They invited applications for a facade improvement grant. Some great strides actually been being made on the Grand Parade and on Oliver Plunkett Street. Patrick Street does seem to be a little behind, shall we say. I know there's lots of vape shops and phone shops there, and we'll get to that later on in the programme. But the council, in their wisdom, invited applications for a facade improvement grant to help revitalise the city's main retail street and, of course, strengthen its visual appeal. So there was two funding elements here. One was for painting and minor exterior works, and one for upgrading and restoring them. So if they were a bit tired and looking down in the dumps, there was a thing for that. And, of course, if your paint needed a new fresh colour, a new fresh application, there was money for that as well. So you could get up to $5,000 or 25% of the costs. There was $200,000 available, but the uptake was disappointing, according to the Echo. Now, when moving from people who are trading on Patrick Street to people who are trading on the beaches, our vendors must now pay a fee to trade at beach locations. We'll all have come across, especially since the COVID times, the horse box coffee vendors, ice cream vendors and all that kind of thing. Though ice cream does tend to be more of a mobile operator as they move around. But the latest ones have been saunas, of course, and these are hugely popular at our beach locations. But sauna operators and food and coffee vendors are going to have to pay up to €1,400 each a year for a license to trade at several beach locations in Cork. And by my reckoning, they have to pay it in one go. So it can't be kind of amortized or, you know, I'll give you 12 monthly installments or any of that. It's a recent bylaw change that's caused all this, and it'll formalise these operators as part of what they're saying is an effort to protect businesses serving areas such as Fountainstown, Myrtleville and other beach areas that usually attract large crowds during spells of hot weather. So they're going to be charged €1,400 a year. And I know you can look at it as less than, you know, £30 a week or something, but it would mean it's up to six times more expensive in Cork than in some other counties in Munster. Whether it will lead to price increases or not remains to be seen. Now, Jenny's Law is making the papers today, and I'll just touch on this here because we will come back to it a little later in the programme, but murdered Jennifer Poole's brother, and we'll speak to him later on, says all political parties and TDs must support a new law in her name. So we will be talking later about Jenny's Law. It's going to go to Cabinet today for approval. And the legislation lets people find out, really, about a potential partner's previous convictions. Now, this must pass through the Oireachtas before becoming law, of course. And it comes after a campaign by Jason Poole after his sister, 24-year-old Jennifer, was stabbed to death by an evil ex, Gavin Murphy, in 2021. More on that a little later on. And speaking of knife crime, once again making the papers today, the Star is reporting that knife crime is a scourge now in Irish society and requires urgent action from criminal justice and public health systems, a victims campaign organisation has said. And they're calling to make the death of Quayam Balogun the last wake-up call we need. Effective action requires both a justice and a public health response, advocates are saying, to be given equal priority. Let's flick back to the Examiner, and they're on their front page, Niamh Griffin reporting that carers have cut back to buy crucial items. And there's a really sad story here. Thousands of carers are apparently cutting back on food, on heat, on other essentials like socialising or even the chance of having a holiday, while at the same time they're paying out privately for the crucial equipment needed, such as wheelchairs and things, to care for their loved ones, which they say should be funded by the public system. And lots of people will say, I'm caring full time at home. I do get some subvention, but I never get a break. I have broken sleep. I never get a holiday. I never get to go out. All these sort of things. And we're providing a service, the carers will say, that is saving the government millions upon millions. So there's a survey out by Healthy Ireland, which showed some very stark percentages. 18% finding it extremely difficult to make ends meet. 71% finding it difficult. So 18 extremely, 71 just difficult. But 49, nearly half, have cut back on food or heat. 76% have cut back on non-essentials. So your world shrinks is the three words that I heard about that particular dilemma that carers find themselves in. Your world shrinks. How sad. On a lighter note, and trying to get lighter, is the magic fat pill. The Sonra reporting today that the strongest weight loss tablet yet has passed trials. It's a daily slimming pill. It's helped patients lose 11% of their body weight in 6 months. AstraZeneca's tablet, it's called Elocoglipron. So it'll probably have a sexier name, by the way. Successfully reduced both fat and blood sugar levels in trials. And early results suggest it could be the strongest treatment yet and become a challenger to pills made by the makers of slimming jabs Wegovy and Mounjaro, which are expected to go on sale within a year. These pills are. Two studies of more than 700 people found, oh, this is a tough one to pronounce, Elocoglipron helped them lose an average of 10.5% of their body fat. Well, a pill would be more appealing than an injection to many people, don't you think? Now, the White House, in fact, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue is almost unrecognisable now. One third of it is knocked down and there's a big circus going up on the front lawn as the Fight House prepares for an MMA event to celebrate Don's 80th. It's a cage fighting arena. It's being set up outside the White House to hold a mixed martial arts event on Donald Trump's 80th birthday. He's a fan of MMA. In fact, I think he was one of the first supporters of Dana White when Dana came to New York with the fledgling MMA organization, the UFC, of course, in its early days. And Trump gave him space to have that event and was front row with Dana White. And the friendship has continued, apparently. Dana, of course, was at the presidential inauguration. But he's described this Sunday's UFC Freedom 250 event as potentially the largest in Ultimate Fighting Championship history. There are 4,000 invited guests. Many are drawn from the US military. Reports last week, of course, they have to be kind of sexy looking. There was kind of weight restrictions and height restrictions before you'd get your invite, and you have to be patriotic and wave your American flag and all that kind of thing. But the workers there have been assembling the UFC octagon on the South Lawn for the past couple of weeks. So that's how the country is celebrating its 250th birthday. You know, one of the largest economies in the world, the greatest army and navy in the world, they would say. They send people into space and they celebrate their anniversary by having a punch-up in front of the seat of power. But there you go. Now, weather is troubling most of us this time of the year, worrying, are we going to get a good summer, particularly for those who are not heading abroad? Well, the Star is saying get sweat for another heatwave instead of set. Met Éireann just issued a fresh June heatwave update for the entire island of Ireland. So that's good news. The state forecaster is keeping shtum, though, about the exact duration of any period of sustained heat. Well, you're a weather forecaster. You've got to hedge your bets, don't you? However, it's been conceded in the latest national forecast overview that temperatures are now set to shoot above average in the middle of the month. And we're predicting Friday and Saturday are going to be a bit better than today, tomorrow and Thursday. And if you're going in the water, apparently there's never been a better film score than that of Jaws. And it's only two notes, and it was written by John Williams. But nothing beats a Jaws 2 holiday is the play on Nothing Beats a Jet 2 holiday in the Star today. Just when you thought it's safe to go back on holidays, a great white has been spotted in the Mediterranean. A great white shark has been captured on video in the Med for the first time. Now, I watch a lot of sailing videos, and a lot of it is to do, you know, snorkeling and diving and that kind of thing. And all of these brave people, it wouldn't be me, are swimming around all types and sizes of sharks. No problem. They coexist. The sharks swim by. The diver waves, "Hello, Mr. Shark." No, not me. I would take off like a motorboat if I saw any shark of any size. But a great white, I don't know how these guys stood still and took this picture, but the divers came face to face with a 15-foot beast. They can weigh up to 4,000 pounds. It's a row of teeth, basically. It thought overfishing had contributed to driving this species to near extinction in the Med, but now it looks as though they're coming into the Med because there's more fish there. It's the first time, apparently, a great white has been filmed in the Med in its natural habitat underwater. So if you're going anywhere in the Med, the Balearic Islands, or you're going to Barcelona or any of the, you know, the Sardinia or any of those places, don't go out above the knees. There's a great white about. We were talking last week, at least Neil was, about the luxury fleet that's being used by the government. Neil had a list of that fleet. I had a quick look at it as well. And the one thing that came to me is that none of the cars were newer than 2022. And I was saying, surely at top governmental level, you know, they'd have a smattering of 23s, 24s and 25s. But the top cars, including those driven, you know, that drive around in Taoiseach, were 2022. And here I think we found the reason why. There's a luxury fleet of motors waiting in the Phoenix Park for the EU bigwigs. They're all 261Ds by the look of it. And if you look in the mirror today, you'll see some of the almost 100 luxury vehicles that Ireland has procured for the upcoming EU presidency. A cost of about €6.5 million. These are Mercedes-Benz, Audi and BMWs. As well, of course, because they're needed, executive minivans. These were all photographed at Farmley, the government building in Dublin's Phoenix Park in recent days, and they're set to be used to ferry prime ministers, diplomats and other VIPs around Ireland for high-level meetings during Ireland's six-month presidency. This starts on July 1st. So I suppose they couldn't really get 262s because it's the first day of 262s. They had to get them ready. So they're 261s, €6.5 million worth of them, pictured in today's mirror. The contract includes 40 executive cars, 44 minivans, and they're also hiring 12 armoured limousines to be used to protect high-risk VIPs. You'd wonder, is it because to give a good look for the country with the 261s? Nobody else will understand exactly what our nomenclature is about. Nobody will know what 261D is. That's 2026 and the first 6 months of the year. Maybe they just wanted the new car smell for all the important bigwigs coming in. Morning from the Neil Prendeville Show with Elevate Credit Union. Get involved in the conversation. You can phone us at 0818 104 106 or by text, SMS. You can do WhatsApp or indeed leave a voice note on 0868 104 106. It's 22 minutes past nine.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Good morning from the Neil Prendeville Show. And now in an ironic and very sad segue between our newspaper reports about knife crime being a scourge in society to the present day, an appalling act of extreme violence. There's been an arrest after a man was seriously injured in a Belfast stabbing. I got the video myself personally about 30 minutes ago, but local DUP councillor Jordan Doran said he was left shocked and deeply concerned by footage circulating online following the stabbing. Many, many people are sending it in to us. Please be careful. If you do feel the need to share this video, just have some measure of concern for those who you're sending it to, who may be, you know, a little queasy in nature. It is absolutely graphic. A man was arrested in relation with the incident and taken into custody. A second man has been taken to hospital. It's literally a video of somebody on the ground being cut. Whoever's taking the video, you know, shouting, neighbours shouting, leave him alone, leave him alone. Eventually overpowering the knife attacker with a hurley. And at the end of the video, you see the police just getting there to arrest that person. So anyone who witnessed the incident or has dash cam or CCTV footage has been urged to contact police. I'm sure they have the video that's been sent to us. Jordan Doran said he was left shocked and deeply concerned by footage circulating online, circulating heavily now following the stabbing. These concerns are entirely understandable, of course. People deserve to feel safe in their homes and communities, regardless of where they live. The footage, look, let's call it apparent footage. It's too real not to be real, to be honest, with the incident circulating online. Innocent bystanders, a number of them heard calling for assistance as they witnessed the horrific assault and eventually laying into the assailant with a hurley, overpowering him, and the police arrived. Watch out for it online. If you're of a sensitive, queasy nature, I wouldn't advise watching that. And I said it's sadly ironic that we're segueing to our next call with such graphic detail, because I want to welcome now Jason Poole, who's the brother of Jennifer Poole, who was murdered by her ex-partner, Gavin Murphy, in 2021. Good morning, Jason.
Morning, Mick. How are you?
Good. It doesn't get any easier listening to that, I imagine.
No, it doesn't get any easier, Mick, to be honest. You know, we have been campaigning not only for domestic violence and in relation to Jenny's Law, but knife crime in general has massively on the rise. We're seeing it continuously rising all across Ireland. We're seeing the younger generation carrying knives and stuff like that. And I know in her time as Minister for Justice, Hannah McEntee did do a lot of work around knife crime and bring in further penalties for those who are I suppose, caught with knives or instances of knives. And it is very, very close to home. Obviously, Jennifer was stabbed multiple times in her murder. And so it does constantly, every time you pick up the newspaper or come to a news story and you hear that, it's a frequent reminder of my circumstances, but also the many other people who have had loved ones die at the hands of violence, particularly in knife crime.
Jason, you're a relatively young man to be taking on such a, you know, an organised campaign. And I know you've spoken in great detail to Neil on this programme about the circumstances surrounding Jenny's death. Could you maybe synopsise that for me? This is kind of an update call. But for those who may not have knowledge of why Jenny's Law is so important to you and why its imminent passing is so important to you, could you give me just the brief outline of what happened and why you undertook this campaign?
Yeah, Jennifer was 24 years old. She was a mother of two when her life was taken from her in April 2021. She had got into a relationship with Gavin Murphy, and within 12, 13 months into the relationship, Jennifer had ended the relationship. You know, she had ended the relationship multiple times before that, but as we know, statistically, it does take an average of 8 times for a woman to leave, or a man in those cases. Jennifer then was murdered at the hands of Gavin Murphy. As we said already, she was stabbed multiple times in her home and died within 3 to 4 minutes. The guards were there pretty quickly on the scene, but Jennifer's life couldn't be saved. And when we went through, I suppose, the court process, we had heard that Gavin had previous convictions for domestic violence and had actually done time in prison for domestic violence offences. And it was really after Jennifer's death that, you know, we're looking at, well, what could we have done, or what could Jennifer have done differently? And there wasn't anything that she could have done differently, because she wasn't aware about his past. She wasn't aware, you know, his family never informed her. He had told Jennifer that he'd been living in Spain for 2 years, and Jennifer believed that story, as did his family tell the same story. So we really sat down and we looked at, well, what could we do so that other families and other victims don't end up like Jennifer, and other families don't have to go through what we're going through. And we spent a lot of time, and lots of pieces of legislation had been changed, but the one piece that was missing was the domestic violence register for perpetrators, male and female, who do commit domestic violence offences, that the judge in the court's process would be able to put this person on a register that will be available then to victims, potential victims, or people getting into new relationships. So the register is going to Cabinet today for approval, and hopefully within the next couple of weeks, we will see this as a new piece of legislation in Ireland. It has taken 4 years. We've had three justice ministers, two government and a general election to try and get to where we are. But we really, really believe that this piece of legislation is going to protect men and women into the future. It is going to save lives. And if this register had been in place when Jennifer was alive, Jennifer would have had the opportunity to check it and know that the person that she was living with had a history of domestic violence and potentially, I believe, would still be alive and be with us today.
Okay, you seem to be suggesting that Gavin Murphy and, by extension, his family somehow sanitised his past when asked about it by Jennifer, and that his 2 years in Spain were being misrepresented.
Yeah, 100%. And you just, you know, when you're in a new relationship, you know, why would you question those things? If someone told you you've been away for 2 years and your family is backing that up, you're going to believe it. But very quickly on into the relationship, obviously things didn't go well for Jennifer. And when Jennifer died, there was a massive amount of evidence, both on her phone, evidence that she had kept of bruises and injuries, and even had attended A&E on several occasions. None of those times were you aware of anything was going on, because like with most victims, they don't feel that they can tell their family or their family is going to believe them. And I suppose the tools are not readily available for them to get support. We know, Mick, that in most cases, particularly when it is most dominantly women who are affected by this, but that the stories I hear, you know, where they're being watched on the doorbell camera, there's AirPods being put in the car to track them. They're not allowed to have phones. Their phones are being checked. They don't have the opportunity to go and sit in a courtroom for 6 or 7 hours in front of a judge. They don't have the 2 or 3 hours to go down to a Garda station to make a statement in some cases, because they're constantly being monitored and watched. Where this is a public available register on the court's website, if the person has a previous conviction, you'll just have to type their name in, the report will come up, what the conviction was for, and that will, I suppose, allow them then to go in to maybe Women's Aid or a local service, like the services in many counties at the moment, and put a proper safety plan in place so that they do leave in a safe way. Because we know that when women are leaving and men are leaving, that is the most highest time at risk. That's when they're higher chance of going through that stages of abuse, I suppose. And at stage 6, stage 7, that's when they're most at risk of actually being harmed. So it's proper that they have a safety plan in place. But this law will give them the tools to know about the previous past of the person that they're living with. Or indeed, if you get into a new relationship and you feel that something's just not right and you're seeing signs, that might be an area or a tool that you will have now at your disposal to check to see if that person has a conviction for that.
I would imagine that the GDPR laws, as they are in place, would have been the primary buffer against this because, and I'm only assuming this, you can educate me here, if a person is convicted in the courts of domestic violence, are they then legally surrendering their right to GDPR in that matter?
Yeah, I suppose the way it works at the moment, Mick, is in most cases that go in front of a judge in an open courtroom that isn't in camera, just relies on a journalist having to be in the court that day to report on the case. And in Ireland at the moment, we do hear journalists reporting on major crimes and major cases, but domestic violence is not something that is reported on because journalists don't tend to be in the courtroom because it isn't maybe as big of a story for them. But it is, if I'm sitting in a courtroom, or you're sitting in a courtroom and there's you know, cases in front of a judge, it's open to you to be able to sit in there and listen to them. What this register is creating is a register of judgments, where a judge has given a judgment that the person will have a conviction and go on the register. So if you're convicted of a crime, that will become part and parcel of that crime. Whether you get a prison term or not get a prison term, the register will still be available. So the judge may decide that the person doesn't go to prison, but has gone on the register for 5 years. But it's a judgment within the court, so then they're getting rid of all their GDPR rights because it's a judgment that's been made in a public courtroom.
Okay, so are domestic violence cases heard then in family law court or in civil court?
Well, it depends. If it's a criminal case, it will be held in the criminal courts. If it's a family law case, it is held behind on camera. But that's because maybe there's an opportunity in some cases in the family law courts where there's children involved and stuff like that, that those cases wouldn't be held in public. But if you have, you know, committed a crime and the judge feels that it's warrants, well, obviously if the victim goes to the guards and there's enough evidence to charge the person in a criminal offence, then you will appear on the register.
Okay, this may be a difficult question for you to ponder on in retrospect, having lost your beloved sister. But at what stage do you think people entering into a relationship going forward from here now, at what stage and what sort of red flags or warning signs should people look for before they even look for, hopefully, what's coming on this register?
Well, I suppose, Mick, there's so many different types of abuse. You have your financial, you have your, you know, your verbal, there's the psychological abuse, there's the physical violence. And I think when you just know in a relationship that something is not right, and in Jennifer's case, it was, you know, in some cases, let's say the family key went missing off the family home and we didn't know where it was gone. He had took it off, so she didn't have full access to her family home. So we were removing her from her friends, removing her from her family. You know, are you wearing that today? Don't wear that. Oh, you love me. Oh, you know, there's that kind of early signs where they kind of are trying to gain that control. But like for every victim, it's very different. And I think the red flags are very different for lots of victims. And I think it's about us as a society now educating ourselves as to what are the red flags in a relationship. And I think there's a massive amount of work to be done on that. And I do think this involves a whole of society approach in order to change domestic violence. We are seeing the most recent reports where there's one domestic abuse being reported every 10 minutes in Ireland. In the first quarter of this year, there was more than 1,000 cases reported per week. That, to me, is on the rise. Does that mean that people are becoming more aware of the red flags and people are becoming more aware? 100%. We have a lot of work to do in this area. And this domestic violence register is just another tool in that process to support victims.
Yeah, Ireland's not as easygoing a place as it was maybe a generation ago. Sometimes people are finding it very difficult to get by here. And that can only lead to more stress and eventually, I think, more domestic violence situations.
100%. And I think that's why we need to be consistent. There's a massive amount of work needs to be done here in relation to education as well. Because, you know, domestic violence is, as we know, is on the rise. And I've just given you some of the figures there that are most recent. But we're seeing it as a younger generation now. And I suppose that's where the education piece needs to come in, that we need to know what is a healthy relationship, that we need to know what is, you know, coercive control, what is abuse. Is it normal for a 14, 15, 16-year-old to be tracking their girlfriend on Snapchat and knowing where they are every move that they make? No, it's not. Do they think that's normal? In some cases, they do. You know, and I work in education and I'm seeing it full on day after day that this is the type of stuff that they just think is normalised. So we have a massive work that needs to be done in relation to education. We have a massive work that needs to be done in relation to society. We've seen the GAA and their campaign last year and the work that they're doing in relation to sports and catching people at that. We need to catch people in the schools. We need to catch people on the football pitch. We need to catch people in all different areas of life to show them what a healthy relationship is. And isn't, you know, just a one class in a school where you come in and you do it for an hour and you move on. This needs to be consistent so that people are going into relationships into the future, knowing what the red flags are, but also knowing what they need to do if they're not happy in a relationship and not to stay there. The victims have come to me, sometimes they're living in the same relationship for 35 years and it's just become the norm and they're leaving their partners after 35 years. So it is moving forward. We are seeing a lot of people, I suppose, take advantage of the new, I suppose, legislation that is already in act around domestic violence, but also the likes of Coco's Law and stuff like that. There's lots of pieces of legislation there now that wasn't there in the past that are protecting victims into the future. But I do want to specify that this legislation and this register doesn't discriminate on gender. You know, everyone is a victim that goes through that process. But also the perpetrator can be male or female. This isn't a domestic violence register for women. it isn't domestic violence register for men. And I just want to be very clear on that, because I know that even reading some of the Cork bios yesterday, when the I suppose the department released the information, a lot of comments were like, oh, well, I hope it the same applies to women. This isn't about gender, men or women. Domestic violence affects both men and women, and the register is there to protect both men and women. But also, if you're a perpetrator, male or female, you will go on to the register. It's a register of judgments. It's the judge in the court who will decide what evidence is in front of them and what the decision has been made. It isn't up to the guards. It is up to the judge.
Okay. I've got a text I want to read to you. Mick, can you ask that man, what can a person do when a loved one's partner is showing red flags but won't listen to us when we say anything?
And look, that's our family all over. You know, did we see red flags? 100%. Did we want to jump in and change the world? 100%. But unfortunately, they have to find out sometimes for themselves. But I would just say to your listener is to be there, to support them, to show them that you are there. That a lot of times victims feel that their family, you know, either one, won't believe them. Two, there's a whole stigma around, you know, that they're at fault here. And it's just a support mechanism. Maybe giving them some of the local services that they might listen to a little bit more. Because when you go into a service, they are experts in this area. They're dealing with it day in, day out. They have a different way of, I suppose, explaining it to victims. And their stories are very similar to other people's stories, and they can start to relate to them. When you're a family member going in guns blazing, like we tried to do at the very end, you know, it just doesn't work sometimes. It's just being there for them and supporting them through the process and minding them and looking after them.
Yeah, I believe the legislation will link to these services as well, Jason, yeah?
There will be, yeah. And as I said, like, you don't even need the service to check out the register, because you can do it yourself. But the service will be there to support them, and the support that will come afterwards is crucial for in this case.
Okay. You say your family intervened, all guns blazing. Obviously, it was tragically too late. Is there a sense of unnecessary shame that attaches to a victim that keeps them quiet for too long?
100% there is that shame, there is that guilt, because remember, Nick, these people who have done this to them have built them up, have molded them to what their way of doing things. They have stripped them of everything and then they rebuild them to what they want. So, you know, this whole thing, your mom doesn't like me, I'm not going down to your family home, or your brother doesn't like me, or your family doesn't like me. They're all tactics that are used to remove the person from their family. And then they get more power. And the problem is when you end that relationship, or you're ending that relationship,
you take the power.
They're losing power. They're taking their power back. They're losing their power. And that's when you're most at risk. So it's really, really important that we're supportive, but that victims don't, you know, feel that they are at fault anymore.
Okay.
There's so much support out there for them.
Minister for Justice Jim McCallum has paid tribute to you for your tireless campaigning for Jenny's Law. He says, if a person is convicted of a serious criminal offence before the courts, that's a public conviction, and the public are entitled to know about that conviction. I'm mindful that we're talking about legislation, but let's not forget about Jenny here. Tell me a little about her and how she's missed.
Look, no day is the same without Jennifer. We're doing our very best. She was 24. She had two beautiful children who we are looking after and minding, who are constantly missing their mummy. She wasn't there for the first days of school. She wasn't there for communions. She wasn't there for confirmations. There's no day that Jennifer wouldn't have come into the family home and lit up the home. You know, you heard her before you seen her when she's driving her car with the music could be blaring and she'd be dancing, the kids be in the back. Just those days are just, you know, they're just not there anymore.
Jason, when you paint that picture of Jenny and everything she's missed, and everything, you know, all that your family is going through, I think it really says to people, really pay heed of the warning signs early.
100%. That's what's crucial here. You know, it's really, really important that they are aware of the warning signs. And sometimes it's just about educating yourselves. You may not ever have this knock on your door, but there's no harm as a person or a citizen of this country to go on to Google, to look at domestic violence, to look at what the red flags are, because it might not be a loved one. It might be a colleague in work. It might be someone on the football team. It might be someone in the knitting club. You just don't know, you know. But what we didn't see as a family, you know, Jennifer had bruises and had stuff, but we never seen them because she used makeup and arnica to cover it up. But her colleagues and work seen some of them. And when Jennifer died, they were able to give more information about her bruises and her wounds than we were, because they had witnessed stuff. So sometimes it isn't just within the family. It can be anybody. We need to be vigilant as a society to not just our family members, but also to the people that we might come across in our sporting world, or as I said, you know, in our workplaces, and just be aware of what the signs are.
Okay, well, you're hoping for a successful outcome. Is it a fait accompli? Is it going to happen, or is there any hurdles you might face now?
I think the main thing is to get the cabinet to approve it today, and then the plan is that within the next 2 weeks that it will be introduced into the House. And it will be then open to discussion for the non-government department parties. But what's really, really important here is that we've already been through Justice Committee stage in January, where every single government and non-government party have a voice at that. And we have a very clear report from that. And any small amount of recommendations that came from there was enacted on. So I'm very confident that we will have this piece of legislation. The bill will be introduced before summer.
And once again, to reiterate, it's non-gender, non-age specific. Statistics are showing that one in five domestic abuse incidents reported in the last 4 years involved a male victim. One in eight involved a child victim. It's not just female victims. It's right across the board, children, men, women. I can only praise you for doing what you did in Jenny's memory and ensuring her name will live on through this legislation, Jason.
Thanks very much, Mick.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Bye-bye. Now, thank OSS you. Cork for victims of domestic abuse are always available on their free phone and helpline. You can ring it for nothing. It doesn't cost a penny. 1-800-497-497. That's OSS Cork for victims of domestic abuse. Their free phone helpline, 1-800-497-497.
Get on to Prendeville now.
0818-104-106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
And get in touch and be part of the conversation. You can text us on 0868-104-106. That's by SMS, by WhatsApp, or indeed a voicemail by phone. It's 0818-104-106. Now, yesterday we spoke to Isabel, who's a working mum with two kids. She worked out that by the time her second kid has gone through the childcare necessity, because they're both working parents, she and her partner will have spent €65,000 on childcare. Veritably a second mortgage. Fiona O'Donovan's on line one. Hi, Fiona.
Good morning, Mick.
Oh, I believe we worked together many years ago.
Many years ago in a different life, yes, Mick.
In a different life. What's your life now? It's obviously a mum with kids, is it?
I'm with kids, yeah, but I'm also the public affairs manager in Cork Chamber of Commerce, and we have recently published a report on childcare provision and its impact on the workplace. So it's timely given the announcement last week by Minister for Education, Norma Foley, of a fairly significant investment into childcare. And which is kind of representative of the scale of, I suppose, the obstacles that parents are facing.
Okay, so how much does childcare concerns or difficulties in access to childcare affect Cork businesses?
Yeah, so I suppose we, as part of our report, we did a survey, and the findings of the survey were quite telling. So it's not something we weren't aware of. Members had consistently told us that childcare issues were impacting their workforce, their operations, and the results of the survey were representative of that. So, you know, among the statistics really were that 36% of respondents had informed us that, you know, employees had declined roles and promotions as part of, you know, their challenges they were experiencing with childcare. And I suppose that was one of the kind of more, you know, alarming statistics that came from this research. In addition, I suppose, you know, 68% indicated that the childcare system was not fit for purpose from what they were seeing among their employees. And 57% then said all of their operations were having a moderate to a significant impact in relation to childcare. So, you know, it's something that is being experienced by our members across the board.
Okay, so
childcare shortcomings or the difficulty in accessing adequate or correct timing for childcare is having an influence. I suppose it's an impediment, really, to career progression if you have a job in the first place. And you're probably seeing an increased demand for flexible working arrangements. Is that right? I want to do an extra day at home or stuff like that.
Had indicated that their employees had been, you know, there had been greater demand for flexible working arrangements, and 100% indicated there was reduced workforce participation. So, for instance, reduced hours, delayed return from leave. So, you know, I suppose, you know, as part of this research, we spoke to providers, we spoke to HR professionals, we spoke to obviously our own members, we did focus group surveys, and the message really was that accessibility was a major issue. You know, I suppose while the government announcement of the investment they were putting in last week is really welcome, it's only one piece of the puzzle. So a lot of the issues our members were experiencing or telling us was that their employees couldn't actually access a place, and therefore they can't avail of any of the subsidies that are being offered by the government. So, you know, we've through the course of our research, you know, we found that, you know, there are thousands and thousands of unregistered childminders, and that, you know, that formed the basis of some of our own recommendations in that area. But because of that, you know, families are availing of childminders but unable to actually avail of the subsidies that the government are offering. And so, you know, that's creating a whole other workplace issue, because, you know, parents are, you know, reasoning it out. You know, is there a point in returning to work full time when we're laying out this amount on childcare? So it all has a knock-on effect. There's a lot of areas that need addressing in the childcare space.
What's the ratio here? Do you have any idea on numbers there as regarding how is this affecting women versus men? I would imagine it's disproportionately affecting more women than men.
Yeah, so we asked, you know, in our members' organisations, you know, how does the impact of childcare responsibilities compare between male and female? 88% said there was a greater impact on female employees. So, you know, I mean, the impact of childcare responsibilities, we all know is greater on women. But these findings actually prove that, you know, it highlights, I suppose, the persistent gender imbalance in caregiving responsibilities. And I think underscores, you know, how limitations in childcare provision can disproportionately constrain women's workforce participation and, you know, career progression. Again, broader implications there for gender equality in the labour market. And that's not something that we want to be, you know, that's not a reputation we want to have here in Cork or indeed across the country. You know, I mean, Cork is absolutely flying it at the moment. We have cranes all over the sky. Everyone knows it's a great place to work, live and invest in. You know, we have light rail in the pipeline. We have, you know, we're working towards that 15-minute city. So, I mean, that's what this report is about. It's not about picking holes in all the different areas that are wrong. It's a solutions-based report. And it's about, you know, the recommendations are designed to make sure that these future problems we can see on the horizon, that we can negate them as quickly as possible and enhance our reputation in that way. I mean, some of the international examples that we use to form these recommendations show that actually if you have childcare right, it's a talent magnet. It's where people want to work. It's where they want to raise their families. Mm-hmm. Whereas at the moment, it's a barrier. You know, the system we have is actually a barrier. And when we have amazing educational institutions in Cork, we have a huge talent pipeline, and we have probably among the most skilled workforce and graduates in the country here in Cork, and the envy of many of our European counterparts. So we want to keep them here. We want to make sure that the ecosystem is correct here for people to invest, live and work.
Okay, we leave it there. Thank you, Fiona O'Donovan, Public Affairs Manager with Cork Chamber of Commerce. Thank you very much. Now, just before we go to news, of course, there are waiting lists for a lot of creches around Cork. Some are waiting, you know, 1 or 2 years. And an interesting topic, an interesting comment from one of our callers yesterday said it should be part of family planning that, you know, you might be planning a child, but 3 years or so ahead of that planned conception of the child, you may have to, in the future, put that child's name as John Doe or whatever, because you don't know is it going to be a boy or a girl, down for childcare and down for Montessori or creche. News at 10 is on the way.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
The Neil Prendeville Show with Elevate Credit Union. Get in touch by phone on 0818 104 106 or by SMS, text on WhatsApp, or indeed leave a voicemail, a voice note on 0868 104 106. To some of the texts that we got yesterday regarding childcare, we will come back to more text on it later in the programme. Norma texted yesterday that hallelujah for the gorgeous woman speaking now about her childcare approach that honours childhood rooted in nature-based learning and real-life skills. We are robbing children of all the richness that childhood should have by making them squeeze into desk-shaped intellectual learning far too young. Desk-based intellectual learning, I beg your pardon. Three cheers for her and those like her. Another one on childcare. Good morning. Just listening into the discussion about creches. My daughter is 13 months old. She has been on a waiting list for a creche since she was 4 weeks old, and I cannot find a creche place. This creates a lot of pressure and stress when trying to get back to work. I'm lucky in the sense I have had 13 months off work. The standard maternity leave is only 6 months, so I have no idea how these parents find childcare. As I mentioned, we are on the waiting list for about 12 months and could be waiting on it another 12 months. Like, how can parents, particularly mothers, return to work? I don't know what I'm going to do for childcare when I return to work at the end of this month. I'm in the Macroom area. Thanks. And that's just my view, says Lisa. And we have more of those to come between now and the end of the programme. Freezing in squalor is the sad next topic. And let's take it up now with Kieran Gould. Morning, Kieran.
Not Seamus. I'm Mick. How are we going, mate?
Good, man. Good to talk to you again. You're a chimney sweep and a coal merchant. We've spoken before, but you're at the coal face, pardon the pun. You're at the front end of seeing some very scary living conditions across Cork City and County. Please tell us about some of what you've seen.
Well, with the chimneys, you're going to tell elderly people's houses, and there's no heads. You'll see the dangers with the stoves. The pipes are damaged. I don't know who to report it. It's very dangerous. They shouldn't be using the stoves. There's holes in the pipes. And you tell them to get them fixed. It's going to cost £1,000 per stove to reline the chimneys, you know, repipe it. They hear that, they get very... They leave it to areas, like, you know. And I don't know who to get on to let people know that their parents are in danger, like, you know.
Right, OK. If you're replacing an open fire with a stove, it would be normal as part of that fitting to get the flue lined, as it were, with a new bespoke metal flue.
Yeah, flexi-pipe. You get a flexi-pipe, from the top down to the bottom, onto it then. But what's happening, the caps fall off the chimney. They're anti-ball, anti-rain caps, right? They fall off the chimney and there's water getting down. And what's happening then, the water's lodging down at the end of the 45-degree angle and it's blowing a hole in the pipe then.
Okay, and that has a danger of putting smoke or carbon dioxide into the room.
Coming out, yeah. There's an elderly couple now out in our car. Like, the pipe is rotting. I don't know. I try people. I don't know how to get in contact with their relations. One is a farmer and the other is an elderly man. And I don't know how to get in contact with. That's frightening.
You've got a big heart for even thinking about it. Would you not maybe, could you not, if you wish, get through to the family in the presence of the elderly man? Maybe ask him to ring the family member?
Yeah, but there's one woman, she's a farm woman, and I told her the prices and just leave it, like. I know what people with chairs, like, because I'd be in contact with fitters, like, you know.
Yeah, it's not cheap. It's not something you do yourself, is it?
No, I wouldn't do it. You'd have to have a self for that. You have to be certified. Yeah. I wouldn't touch that, anything like that. If anything happened, you'd be locked up, like, you know. But then you're with other people then, right? I was in a house there a couple of weeks ago and I pulled the curtain. There was no light in the room. And I was horrified when I seen your man, he had timber framed windows and the timber was rotten. There was a hole in the timber, Nick.
Right, so that's going to leave him cold and damp.
there was a pane of glass then busted. So there was a 2 foot gap, I say a foot and a half, 2 foot gap, where the wind and the rain be coming in. And the man was sleeping inside that room. See, I asked him, I said, I told him, there's grants there. He knew nothing about grants, the poor man. And the windows and house are rotten. They're all, they need to be done, like. But, what's the name? I said, I guarantee you, hopefully someone will start over. Because, like, I was talking to another man about grants, Mick, right? He went, he don't go online. 9 months it took him to get the paperwork, get everything sorted, to get a go-ahead to get the windows fitted. Nine months from start.
Is this a private house or is it an authority
a
house?
Private house.
Private house.
Private house. The man I say is 80, the man that I inside there with, he's around 80 years of age. And I was cleaning the chimney inside in the house and there was a draft coming in the window. I said, how the fuck is he living here?
Where are these people's families? Do they have any family that could help?
I don't know. I haven't seen your woman, Dylan. You don't know. You're going to get a call off this man, like. You don't know any of their families. That's the thing about it, like.
Yeah.
And the neighbours, those neighbours, they'll know. I was a few neighbours, they're farmers. So they won't know nothing about the man. I said they wouldn't even know if he's living there.
So you're seeing a lot of poor living conditions.
Yeah, and with the grants, then, like, there's other people, then you go to the houses, the grants, I said, you'd be getting the grants here for the windows. They couldn't afford to pay the money up front. If you're going for the grant, right, you have to pay the money up front, and then they pay you. So where are people going to get 10 or 12,000 quid?
I understand, yeah.
Right, would you think the government come along here, and you go in, oh, the windows are for Larry windows or whoever, like, and then the government say, we pay ye, get the few wab off that crowd, we pay the rest.
Yeah, I understand. Or put a lien on the property for when it's eventually sold. You know.
No. If they're entitled to a grant, we can't they go on to the window group and say, right, you're doing their windows, we'll pay you the 9,000 quid or whatever it is, and leave the customer pay the 1,000 or 2,000, whatever it is.
Yeah, and try being closer to no cost.
Yeah, but the man that was telling me it took him 9 months, Mick, right? It took him 9 months to get the go-ahead, right, get the windows. But there's the only thing, this, you know, I said to them, if there's money there, you get it. And he was paying 11,500 up front for his windows. And he was entitled to a grant.
Yep.
Well,
no older person, or very few would be able to come up with that up front.
They wouldn't, but yeah, they could. It's not that wrong. If I put a challenge to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let you get a person that need windows and fill up the forms for them and see how long it would take you to do the forms for that person.
Massive red tape, I'd say, is it?
Yeah, and see how long it would take to get the windows in. 9 months to talk to this man, and he's a fairly smart man. He's educated, like, you know? And it took him 9 months to get the go-ahead. So I can imagine an elderly person that know nothing about computers or anything like that. They never get it done.
But I wonder, is there an elderly person's advocate for the likes of Paddy O'Brien, for instance, who could look in and on various situations, could be contacted, maybe call out to somebody, see how bad the situation is, and have a direct line into the grant application system whereby he vouches that this is somebody in dire need. They're living in damp, cold, freezing conditions. It's almost uninhabitable or whatever. Get the grant paid out.
Yeah, I was in the house last week and I tell him, always, the windows are dire. I said, no, they're dire. These windows badly need to be run for this man.
Okay, and just in case any of our listeners think that, you know, you're making any of this up, tell me about the person who was broken into.
It's the same person.
Same person.
He's broken in there, and the windows are not replaced. The window's not replaced. It's just there's a board up in his window.
But what did the intruders take?
I say there wouldn't be much there to take. Yeah. Mickey's not only man, like, do you know what I mean?
So even the thieves realised there's no point stealing from this man. He has nothing.
A lovely man. He's a very, very nice man. I was trying to tell him about the grants. And I go out the door and I said, fuck it, I'll have to make a call about this, like, you know?
Yeah.
You won't be one of them. Like, I was only cleaning the chimney, and then I was freezing inside the house. I swear to God.
And
I had to pull the curtain because he had no bulb in, and I pulled the curtain, and then I see the stay at the window. I said, Jesus, look at this.
Yeah, maybe we should try to track down family here, and they should get on board. They should get on the case. But, you know, he can have a very safe chimney. He can be well swept by you and put a fortune into lighting a fire, but it's going out the window.
What is that? It's definitely, he is definitely off the end, though. I don't know, but that's the end, like, there was no rain. Can you imagine if it was raining? The rain is beating in his window, like. Well, all the windows in the house have to be done, like, you know. But, like, it's a private house. I know, but someone else should be there to help the man and soft blow for him, like, you know.
Yeah.
But the grants, the farms, they're killing people. There should be someone there inside the county hall or the city hall for an elderly people or people that can't fill up the farms. They should be there to fill up the farms for them to help the people.
Wouldn't that be an ideal world?
Yeah, it is, but it's not computerised now. And I tell you, be quite honest, I wouldn't be able to go on the computer myself because I never used a computer myself. That's me straight. But there should be something done there, and especially for someone to pay 11,000 quid, man, he's 75 years, I say, roughly. It could be anywhere near 80 years of age. Pay 10,000 or 11,000 quid up front and then try to get the money back.
Try to claim it back, yeah. I understand. We'll do our best to get this case in front of Paddy O'Brien. We're mindful of GDPR issues as well and respecting people's privacy. Paddy from the over-60s might do us a favour and look into it. So we'll see what can be done. But I do take your point. In an ideal world, and we're far from it, there should be an elderly person's advocate inside the city hall or county hall or wherever to deal with these issues. Get an inspection done. Know that this person is in dire need of it. Get the grant approved. Come to some arrangement with the window companies. Maybe a preferred window company, could do a hire purchase agreement over a number of years. The other side of it, and it's very stark, you can be sure if that old person passes on, there'll be plenty of family in the mix trying to take possession of the house. So
when just 50 people are only afterwards, and when you're buying, they'll be around, oh God, I loved them a long time.
Yeah, so,
Jesus.
You know, if the house is deemed to be uninhabitable, there could be a penalty on the family there, and that might be the stick rather than the carrot that's needed.
Yeah, what should be done with the windows anyway? It helped a lot of people straight away. It gets someone to do the falls from. They could say, go to this company, we'd pay the grant money to them, and you come up with the balance. They could walk to the credit union then. The man that got the 11 windows, Mick, I was at him when he got the windows. I'm a friend of his. But he only paid about 2,500 quid for all his windows. He got a grant about 8,500.
Yeah.
So,
and it transformed the house, I'd say, did it?
Unbelievable. But if that man then, right, all he had to do is come up with 2,500. He could get a loan off of someone, the credit union or something. All he had to do is take 2,500 instead of coming up with 11,000 or 12,000.
Yeah, and of course you're putting about 10 grand on the value of the house for any future owner, so it makes perfect sense.
Well, you're that age, so you won't be worrying about the value of the house. Is that like, do you know what I mean? Do you know?
All right, what's the cost of a bag of coal these days?
Oh, McBuy for you. It's cash, all right.
Johnny Cash.
I tell you now, the coal has gone up €30 a ton since the 1st of May. And coming in October, there's £2,000 supposed to go out of carbon taxes,
yeah.
Supposed to go out of it, and they reckon the supplier is going to put up again. So if I was people, I stock up during the summer because God only knows what the price is going to be.
Yeah, but I know people are stocking up on oil already for the winter, even though Mr. Trump has just said that he hopes for a resolution on the Strait of Hormuz in about the next 2 days. In other words, before his birthday and before the World Cup starts.
Yeah, but we're having that for the last 90 days.
Oh, I know.
10 days. Look at Putin. How long did he say he'd have 7 days? He's gone on 3 or 4 years. they're all handing wacky back, I say, or something.
All right. Thanks a million. Some people are offended by your language. I'll apologise on your behalf, okay?
Oh, sorry about that.
I know what happens.
Yeah, so be good.
All the best, Kieran. Bye-bye. Kieran Gould. Mick, ring City Hall, and they'll send someone out to do everything. The window company will do everything, including the paperwork. says a texter. Well, we get that information to Kieran. They did it for my parents, said this texter. Ring City Hall, they'll send someone out to do everything. It's a private house now, bear in mind. The window company will do everything, including the paperwork. They did it for my parents. Now, the show often gets so busy that we don't get to things, and I neglected to mention this yesterday, but we are, of course, giving away summer family passes every day for the rest of the summer. And this week we feature Cork City bus tours. And we were so busy with the childcare issues yesterday that we didn't get to give one away. So we'll give away two today, okay? Cork City bus tours is this week's feature. You can see the very best of Cork City and feel the wind in your hair, if you had any hair, from the open top deck of our bright red city tour bus. Enjoy panoramic views from the top deck. We'll drive through the historic streets of Cork, including the beautiful Victorian Quarter. And as you travel along Cork's famous St. Patrick's Quay and cross the mighty River Lee on its many distinct bridges, from the sacred sites of the Shandon Cathedral and St. Finbar's Cathedral to the more open-air pleasures of Fitzgerald Park and the UCC campus, you'll experience every part of Cork City. From the open top deck of the bus, you'll also see Cork's history, both past and present. It's, of course, a city whose story is told on its streets, and there's no better way to spend your time when visiting Cork. So we'll pick a caller and we'll open our lines towards the end of the programme. But we'll pick a caller as well. Best caller of the day. We'll give away summer family passes. This week we're featuring Cork City bus tours.
Get on to Prenderville.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prenderville Show on Red FM.
And by phone on 0818 104 106. Good morning from the Neil Prenderville Show. And good morning to Anne. Hello, Anne. Are you there? Okay, well, just go to some of the texts then. Back to childcare. Getting quoted €500 a week for childcare in West Cork because nobody's registered for the National Childcare Scheme. Mick, can we address the elephant in the room, please? There should be no need for childcare. One income should be enough and one parent can stay at home then raising the family, says Trevor. That caller should be an advocate for childminders. She speaks so much sense. She speaks about the children who are the most important thing. Childminders are only trying our best and we want to give the children a nice environment. This is absolutely outrageous. How can she, Michelle, claim a creche is the best option? The truth is creches institutionalise children. The best thing for a child is to be with the mother. After that, as similar as possible, a home environment. Just because you're qualified doesn't make you right for the role. And one more, I urge you to please, out of respect for the childcare staff, parents and children, before any childcare provider opens their mouth, ask if they follow the regulations and hire competent staff, because childcare staff are worn out from trying to do their jobs properly and working for providers who have zero respect for staff and children. So stuff from across the board there. John, good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm good. How are things, John?
Well, I'm absolutely horrified and shocked at the video, and you've seen it.
I've seen the video. It's quite harrowing watching. There are various reports coming now. These are unconfirmed, that the victim who has been hospitalised, but there are varying other reports, unconfirmed, now surfacing on social media as well as to the as to his state of health, shall we say. What did you make of it?
I'd be surprised if he survived. I hope he does survive it, but I'd be very surprised if he did. This was an attempted beheading, obviously. Like, I mean, you can see what went on. This guy was hand up in the air after starting the beheading process, and he's shouting some kind of a slogan and then continuing on to go cutting again. Now, the people, I don't know, I didn't get in the bell faster, but at least they did eventually, but the guy with the holly came up and he whacked the head off of the colour guy. So, look, this is, I can see absolute riot in Belfast tonight over this. Like, I mean, but I'm afraid of this thing will engulf the whole country because everyone is talking about it, Mick. Right? I know several people now, about my age now and younger now, who are now when they're socialising in Cork, they're carrying
a knife.
Yeah, well, they're carrying, let's put it that way. Because they don't feel safe, and they said, at least I have a chance if I'm attacked. And it's all down to the state of fear that people think that there are people walking amongst us now with no mental health checks, no criminality background under them. They're coming down over the border. They reckon there could be 100 a week, if not more, coming over the border on buses and taxis because there is no border anymore. Nobody knows, even Helen McEntee, when she was asked, when she was pushed by group media, I mean, she's admitted openly, as the Minister of Justice, Mick, that she hadn't a clue how many people are coming over the border. In fact, she hadn't a clue how many people were even in the country illegally that don't know. And the likes of Micheál Martin and Harris and the rest of them, right, they are sacrificing the Irish people, both north and south. It's all the one island to me, right, north and northern, southern Ireland, right? But, I mean, you had the Christ stabbings in Dublin. You had the two dead lads up in Sligo, the two gay lads. This guy was trawling the internet looking for gay men to kill them. He disemboweled them while they were alive and beheaded them, right? You had Ashley Murphy, stabbed 12 times in the neck, even though the media said that she was strangled for the sanitised version because they didn't want a riot, but the riot came anyway. And what I'm afraid of, Mick, is that people that are on my road now, coloured people, Chinese people, Indian people, that they are going to...
They're going to get the brunt of this.
They get the brunt of this because you'll have people pointing the fingers and they're saying, oh, there's another one of them. But they're not another one. They're just people like you and me, came here, raised their families, they're working hard, they're paying their taxes, the whole lot. And that's the danger, that some innocent person now is going to lose their life.
John, I don't think any Irish person, no matter what your political sensibility, has any issue with legal immigration, as long as somebody's coming here and they're supporting the economy and paying their taxes. Unfortunately, we seem to be going to a place with knives that America has reached long ago with guns. And I'd ask you the question, why would anyone carry going into town with no intention of using it? You can use the argument, I need it for my own protection. But were you ever in a knife fight? How are you going to protect yourself? And you're also assuming, I'm bringing it because I might get attacked with a knife. Is that what society is coming to?
Well, that's the problem. I mean, and I blame the politicians for that. I blame the open borders. They're denying. And let's be honest, the people that are really missing off the pitch here is the main opposition party. We have no opposition at the moment. Sinn Féin are not the opposition. They are not standing up for their... That's what you do, Mick, when you're in opposition. You stand for the people. If you see the government are messing up in any way, you stand for the people as the main opposition. But at the moment, Sinn Féin are missing off the pitch.
Yeah, Independent Ireland seem to be doing a better job than Sinn Féin at the moment. But Sinn Féin got that message in the last round of voting, didn't they?
They did. And I guarantee you, when the next election comes, I think that's goodbye, Mary Lou, because I think their day has come and gone now, because they've left the people down. They were the same in Dublin, in Coolock, with the riots over the race riots again, and there'd be open borders. And Mary Lou did not stand with the people. And this has been noted, and people are calling them traitors. Simple as that. That's the word. I know people, Mick, that were involved with Sinn Féin for donkey's years. And they will never vote for them again. Never.
Okay, so they've got a bit of work to do to claw that back. John, it's a horrific attack. You've watched it in full, have you? I have as well. Very sobering watching at that time of the morning. And if you do get the video, if you're listening and you haven't seen the video, and we've piqued your curiosity, you're better off not watching it, to be honest.
Well, this is a thing, if you're any bit sensitive. Like, but I mean, what it is doing, like, it's inciting hatred. And I'm afraid that innocent people could pay the price for this. And I don't want to see an innocent person, because of their colour or whatever, killed on the back of this lunatic last night, or the lunatics that we have down here, killing people like Ashley Murphy and the two gay lads and the child in Dublin and the crash.
All right, John. We've covered that. Thanks once again for your call. There is some suggestion on social media that there will be a non-partisan protest in the north, in Belfast, tonight, that could possibly include Republicans and Unionists in a kind of a show of solidarity peacefully against the happenings of that horrific video. If you get it, just bear in mind, the video doing the rounds, and it is everywhere, is horrific. Be careful if you're watching that. Last week we were talking about a woman who was over and back from Poland claiming benefits, and it prompted Con to get in touch. Hi, Con.
Nick, how are you doing?
Good. Over and back on the old Ryanair train and claiming the benefits here, and taking or sending a lot of money home. What's your situation?
Well, the story with that is the old passports should be checked, you know, for the last time in, last time out. But I think, as I said in my email, I was in transit back. I paid off a ship in the UK, and I did send you on a photograph, a picture of my it's a Bermudian shipping...
Oh, the Seaman's book.
Yes. And it's the exact same colour... As you might have seen it, same size. Obviously, on the front of it, it says Bermudian Seafarers discharge book. And coming to the airport, I just got in the queue, had my man bag, pulled out this document, handed it to the guy behind the desk. He had a quick glance at it. But the funny part about it, Mick, the passport is in the back of it. Thanks very much. Stay through.
Okay. Maybe he was respectful of the fact that you're applying your trade at sea. Maybe they recognised you or something, but they didn't look at your passport, no?
Well, I didn't show him my passport. I got it mixed up. I had my passport and that book in my man bag, and I picked out the wrong one and just gave it to him. And, look, it could be that, but the law of the land is it is not actually as a travel document.
Okay, how many years ago was this?
About 5 years ago.
Okay, one of the first in Cork to have a man bag, though.
Well, there's no man bags are nearly mandatory now, Mick.
I know. Well, a certain broadcaster here has been sporting one for about 20 years, just some slagging at the start, but now they've become very popular, haven't they?
Well, they're better than a rucksack, you know.
Yeah, and if you keep them to the front, you can even keep your hand on them in crowds. It does protect your belongings.
Mick, actually, they're very protective of any bits and pieces you have in the bag. You can swing it around, and it's a safer way to mind your whatever you've got in the bag. You know, and they're not big.
Yeah, I'll tell you a funny story along the same lines, Con. About 25, maybe 30 years ago, we were on a family holiday in Lanzarote, went out for breakfast, had a credit card or whatever, paid for the breakfast, came home, back to the apartment we were, you know, renting, and saw on the flat roof, coming down from the flat roof, two footprints on the white paint. And I said, no, that's suspicious. Went in, and my wallet was gone. My passport was gone. Any cash we had for the holiday was gone. Luckily, I had the credit card, okay? So went to the Guardia Civil and reported the same. So now we're down to one credit card, no passport to get home. I had at the time an American green card. Imagine that. I could have had the choice to go and live in America. And because of, you never know, maybe the green card is being used in America. Maybe I'm a mass murderer over there. Who knows? But everything gone. And it took the bones of 3 days of a 7-day holiday with the Guardia Civil, language difficulties and everything, to get a stamped piece of paper to say that I was Mick Mulcahy, okay?
Yeah.
So came to passport control, and I was whipping out my piece of paper, so proud to have it. The member of An Garda Síochána behind the desk was a friend of mine, Jim Nine. Hello, Mick, in you go. After 3 days.
Yeah. But Mick, I'm not going to better that story. I was in transit through the Panama Canal in a place called Cristobal.
That's a better story already.
I got robbed, and I wasn't too keen in giving my money over. I put up a bit of a battle, but then I had a knife put to my throat, shiny stainless steel knife, and I was quite pleased to let him take my watch and take my few dollars.
Okay, so and life is more important.
Yeah, but that's how life was. But look, the man actually in Cork, he may have known me, and some did know me because I was a fairly frequent, I was frequently transiting through anyway, you know, Mick.
Mm-hmm. Never done it, love to do it.
Sorry?
I've never done that. I had the chance last year, but other things came up that I couldn't do it. But Con, it's great to talk to you. Have you been all over the world at sea?
I've done a bit of it, Mick, yeah. It's all finished now. I can only look at it on the globe, you know, but never mind, it's been done, and I got through it, and your life was interesting. Great to hear you on the air again, Mick.
Thanks, Con. Thank you very much. Good morning to you. Thanks very much. Some texts coming in on 0868104106. Mick, how much is Micheál Martin costing the taxpayers with his daily unnecessary trips on the taxpayer's jet and being driven around the country just to put his name on plaques, all while he's destroying the country with open borders and made this country so unsafe, says a texter. On that attack, good morning, Mick. Are you going to talk about the attempted beheading by an illegal migrant last night? I've seen the video and it's absolutely horrendous. Every politician in Ireland that supports this immigration policy has the blood of every man and woman that has been killed by illegal migrants directly on their hands. With the migration pact to be passed in 3 days, This is the only topic that should be discussed over the coming days. They all have to be sent back for the sake of our children and the preservation of Ireland, says Ty. Yeah, well, we did touch on it, and I know the Migration Pact is coming up for ratification. I'm sure we'll get more on that during the week as it comes closer. On domestic abuse, I put up a 20 years. My advice is to get help. They are just bullies. Don't waste all this time that you should be living happily. And on City Hall, and we'll talk about this a little later in the programme. Hi, Mick, you're right about City Hall. They don't tell people about anything they're entitled to. It's the same with older people who often don't know what they're entitled to. Most of us do not know how to go online or use email because we were not educated like people are today. It has to be somebody's job. Let us know by sending us letters. Thank you, Mick, and I love listening to your show, says Teresa. Get in touch 0818 104 106 by phone or by text, SMS or voicemail and WhatsApp 0868 104 106.
Get on to Prenderville.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prenderville Show on Red FM.
Just turned a quarter to 11. Good morning with the Neil Prenderville Show being brought to you by Mick Mulcahy as Neil is on holidays. Now, the Before We Die campaign is a family-led initiative in Ireland advocating for adults with intellectual disabilities who are at risk of being left without housing or care when their elderly parents pass away or can no longer look after them. We touched this morning on the very stark statistics of people in 24-hour caring mode and what they're putting up with and what they're sacrificing to do it. But let's not forget that more than 2,000 adults with intellectual disabilities in Ireland are still living with parents aged over 70. And that does not augur well for the future. Sinead McGrath has been representing many parents in Cork particularly who are fighting to get the Before We Die campaign over the line. She joins us again. I know you've updated Neil on a number of occasions with this. Good morning, Sinead.
Good morning, Mick. How are you? Thanks for the opportunity this morning.
You're more than welcome. You have twin adult sons, Lee and Alex, and they have intellectual challenges.
That's right. So I suppose I began my process on this for the social housing application forms and everything like that back in about 2017. That's when my sons turned, they were coming up to age 18 and they had stated that they want to live independently. So they know, and I obviously know because we talk about it a lot at home, that they will need support in place for them to live independently. So I started with another two parents here in Cork going about what the process was to get them on the social housing application and to get on that list, because we were advised by a CEO of the service provider at the time that this is with the route to go, that they need to have their name on the social housing application and to access any support, and everything will be provided within their community. If it was only that simple. It's been a long, lengthy process, to be honest, and I don't know where the lack of communication broke down, but nobody told parents in general across all service providers. I don't know if it's the service providers or the HSE or whose responsibility, but nobody told parents. So they should have been told this since 2017 and before, maybe, that their name needs to be on the social housing list. So what we're finding in the campaign now is we're coming across a lot of elderly parents. You gave the stats there, their nationwide stats. In Cork alone, we have 178 adults, parents over the age of 70 in Cork County, and in Cork City we have 128. They're all over the age of 70, still caring for their adult sons or daughters at home. So
you're looking at about 300 parents across Cork.
300 parents across Cork. Now we've managed to come across, and we're reaching out, and we're going to do a social media, because obviously those parents at that age group would be priority for the Before We Die campaign, because they're the ones, I suppose, facing the crisis. Sooner, we would have parents in their 90s and their 80s also reaching out to us. So we are going to try and reach those and help them go through the application process. But we are encouraging people to reach out to their service providers and get the help that's required with the social housing application form, and they can help them with that process. Now, I suppose what we're finding with the campaign, and we've made some progress to date in terms of meeting government officials, and we have more meetings coming up. Our committee-based members, Tony Murray, along with our other committee, now will be meeting with Emer Higgins again. They're going to be meeting with Norma Foley. They're going to be meeting with Simon Harris again. Those ministers, again, we're meeting first time with Simon Harris, and we have requested a second meeting with the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin. He met us in Cork some months ago, so we're hoping to meet him again. So we're making kind of progress, but I suppose the biggest progress I can see, and we can all see on the committee, is the opening up for the family conversations that's happening in people's homes. And the older parents, in terms of the 70 and the 80-year-olds, they're reaching out. People are having the family conversations at home about what will happen to this person with the intellectual disability that they love and care for every day. And people are starting to talk about it. They're reaching out to us. People are talking amongst themselves, and we are sharing information. So we have like the Cork Support WhatsApp group set up, as well as Before We Die All. There's loads of different channels you can communicate with the committee and the campaign. But in Cork alone, we have nearly 300 members on that Cork WhatsApp support group. And it's where we share information about how to go, just say, for instance, about getting a social worker who you will need to fill in part of the medical form for the social housing application. But I suppose the biggest changes we're seeing is within the families, and people are talking out. They're talking about it more. And
I can only imagine the worry that must be on the shoulders of the parents who've given literally a career's length of 24-hour care in their own homes.
Well, it's a lifelong. It's not just a career. It's a lifelong.
Yeah. Since the children were born, essentially. Yeah. So it's a lifelong from then. And I don't mean to be, you know, making your mission seem impossible. It's a very lofty ideal and a very noble mission. In fact, you want every son and daughter with an intellectual disability in Ireland to have a safe and appropriate, supported home in their community before their parents are gone. You're doing this, however, in the middle of the most acute housing crisis this nation has ever undergone, and while we have record numbers of homeless people. Do you think you deserve, and do you think you'll get the appropriate attention, the construction, and the investment that...
Well, it's absolutely their human right. It's
absolutely, 100%, yes.
With the intellectual disability, and I suppose, again, in Cork, where we have kind of made a bit of extreme progress, actually, it's the best progress around the country with all the local authorities. We've met with Cork City Council, Cork County Council, sat down going through the application process. They've now both actually set aside a liaison person, a direct person that we can liaise with in both Cork City and Cork County. That's the first around the country. So that is progress in itself. If we can replicate what we're doing here in Cork around the country, that would be absolutely amazing. I do think we are going to continue to fight with it. We'll continue to tell and ask parents, and we actually have a lot of siblings as well who care for an adult sister or brother with an intellectual disability. So we're asking everybody to continue to lobby their TDs. We will continue, obviously, as part of the committee. We continue our lobbying, but we are reaching out to all families and asking them to lobby their TDs and their local councillors.
Okay, this is no small issue. It's no small issue because you had a meeting in May in the Silver Springs Hotel and 200 families showed up.
There was 400 families showed
400.
Up. 400? Yeah, so we had a meeting on the 21st of May. It was a hugely successful meeting. We originally booked that room for 50 people. We had to continue to change and amend the booking. We ended up with over 350 seats booked completely, and then we had a lot of people turn up who at the end of the room was full. So we'd nearly 400 people, including some of the service providers. We had some local TDs, we had some local councillors, we had lots, mostly families. And I suppose while that was a hugely successful event, we have families still reaching out to us after the event, and it was obviously very overwhelming because they weren't aware how stark the situation was until we gave them. Like, even those figures we got for the 178 people in Cork County over 70 and the 120-odd in Cork City, it was one of our committee members, Sarah, did her own research, and she obtained that from the local census. I mean, that information has been sitting there with the HSE or nobody else looking for it, and it's there, available. So that's where we're doing our own research and we're getting our own figures, and that's how we can make progress that way.
You're very positive, Sinead. You're very hopeful.
I have to remain hopeful, and I do. And you know what? It was giving hope to the elderly parents that feel so isolated and alone. Because just a typical, example. Like, I'm going off today now with my two boys. We've Special Olympics golf, but I'm still in the situation at this time in my life that I can still drop and collect them and do that with them, so they're not missing out. But the older parents, what we're hearing from them is that their adult son or daughter, who's now in their 40s and 50s, are ending up more isolated and alone. And they, because the elderly parents are unable anymore to drop them or bring them or collect them, or so that they've no social interaction really. And they basically have their social life and their actual, I suppose, they're regressing then because they're not mixing with people. And the guilt then attached with that is coming from the older parent. I mean, there should be no guilt attached when you're after getting to like that age and minding or looking after.
And when you've done your level best all your life, what other kind of stories are you hearing from Cork families?
They're the type of stories that we're hearing, that they feel very isolated, and things now like that they're no longer able to drive the elderly parents, so they can't. The person with the intellectual disability then, I suppose their life is kind of, what would you say, it's disintegrating for one further.
It's a very unfair way to go through your autumn years, isn't it? Having given a lifetime to the betterment of your children, you know, that now physically or, you know, for whatever reason, you can't travel, you may not be able to drive. Yeah, your eyesight might be going, but the worries are increasing. But the worries are always increasing. Yeah.
You don't have the same stamina. Do you know what I mean? You don't, absolutely. And they've given their level best their whole life, loved and cared for their person in their life with the intellectual disability. And now to go give that level of care to someone you love so much and that level of support to get to the end of your life and not know what's around the corner.
And moving into a situation where you may need care yourself as an elderly person.
Absolutely.
Must be a worry as well.
And we have lots of older parents, and not in their 70s, now even younger, that would be sandwiched between caring for a spouse now and an older adult, someone with an intellectual disability, or between elderly parents themselves and their son or daughter. Do you know? So,
yeah. Sinead, how can people get in touch?
We have a website. We have a Facebook page on Instagram. It's all beforewedie.com. We have a public page on Facebook. You'll find us that way. Instagram. There's an email for us. If you're happy enough to share all our social media handles, I can send them on to you there.
Okay.
And people can reach us that way. They can take my number if it's anyone locally in Cork and they want to get on that local Cork WhatsApp group. They're all more than welcome to join that. It's where we share information and share information about services and stuff like that. But I suppose it's just to reach out and tell people through the campaign what we're finding. They're no longer alone.
Okay.
They're sharing their experience now with people who understand, because we're all in the exact same boat. Some
Sinead, thanks for the hope. Thanks for the positivity.
Thank you.
Thanks for the energy thanks for coming on.
Thanks again for the opportunity, Mick. Have a good day now.
You too.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. The Neil Prendeville Show. Get in touch. 0818 104 106 by phone. 0868 104 106 by text. And news at 11 is next.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
The Neil Prendeville Show with Elevate Credit Union. Get in touch by phone on 0818 104 106 or by SMS, text on WhatsApp, or indeed leave a voicemail, a voice note on 0868 104 106. To some of the texts that we got yesterday regarding childcare, we will come back to more text on it later in the programme. Norma texted yesterday that hallelujah for the gorgeous woman speaking now about her childcare approach that honours childhood rooted in nature-based learning and real-life skills. We are robbing children of all the richness that childhood should have by making them squeeze into desk-shaped intellectual learning far too young. Desk-based intellectual learning, I beg your pardon. Three cheers for her and those like her. Another one on childcare. Good morning. Just listening into the discussion about creches. My daughter is 13 months old. She has been on a waiting list for a creche since she was 4 weeks old, and I cannot find a creche place. This creates a lot of pressure and stress when trying to get back to work. I'm lucky in the sense I have had 13 months off work. The standard maternity leave is only 6 months, so I have no idea how these parents find childcare. As I mentioned, we are on the waiting list for about 12 months and could be waiting on it another 12 months. Like, how can parents, particularly mothers, return to work? I don't know what I'm going to do for childcare when I return to work at the end of this month. I'm in the Macroom area. Thanks. And that's just my view, says Lisa. And we have more of those to come between now and the end of the programme. Freezing in squalor is the sad next topic. And let's take it up now with Kieran Gould. Morning, Kieran.
Not a share of Mick, how are we going, mate?
Good, man. Good to talk to you again. You're a chimney sweep and a coal merchant. We've spoken before, but you're at the coalface, pardon the pun, you're at the front end of seeing some very scary living conditions across Cork City and County. Please tell us about some of what you've seen.
Well, with the chimneys, you're going to tell elderly people's houses and there's no ahead. You'll see the dangers with the stores. The pipes are damaged. The pipes are damaged. I don't know how to report it. It's very dangerous. They shouldn't be using the stores. There's holes in the pipes. And you tell them to get them fixed. It's going to cost £1,000 per stove to reline the chimneys, you know, repipe it. They hear that, they get very... They leave it where it is, like, you know. And I don't know how to get at it to let people know that their parents are in danger, like, you know.
Right, okay. Yeah. If you're replacing an open fire with a stove, it would be normal as part of that fitting to get the flue lined, as it were, with a new bespoke metal flue.
Yes, a flexi pipe. You get a flexi pipe, from the top down to the bottom onto it. Then, but what's happening? The people, the caps fall off the chimney. They're anti-ball, anti-rain caps, right? They fall off the chimney and there's water getting down. And what's happening then, the water's lodging down at the end of the 45-degree angle and it's blowing a hole in the pipe then.
Okay, and that has a danger of putting smoke or carbon dioxide into the room.
Coming out, yeah. There's a little cup now out in our cock. Like, the pipe is rotting. I don't know. I try people. I don't know how to get in contact with their relations. One is a farmer and the other is an elderly man. And I don't know how to get in contact with. That's frightening.
You've got a big heart for even thinking about it. Would you not maybe, could you not, if you wish, get through to the family in the presence of the elderly man? Maybe make ask him to ring the family member?
Yeah, but there's one woman, she's a farm woman, and I told her the prices and just leave it, like. I know what people would charge, like, because I'd be in contact with fitters, like, you know.
Yeah, it's not cheap. It's not something you do yourself, is it?
No, I wouldn't do it. You'd have to have a self for that. You have to be certified. Yeah. I wouldn't touch that, anything like that. If anything happened, you'd be locked up, like, you know. But then you're with other people then, right? I was in a house there a couple of weeks ago and I pulled the curtain. There was no light in there in the room. And I was horrified when I seen your man, he had timber framed windows and the timber was rotten. There was a hole in the timber, Nick.
Right, so that's going to leave him cold and damp.
There was a pane of glass then busted. So there was a 2 foot gap, I say a foot and a half, 2 foot gap, where the wind and the rain be coming in. And the man was sleeping inside that room. See, I asked him, I said, I told him, there's grand still. He knew nothing about grand the poor man. And the windows and house are rotten. They need to be done, like. But what's the name? I said, I guarantee you there, hopefully someone will start over, because, like, I was talking to another man about grants, Mick, right? He don't go online. 9 months it took him to get the paperwork, get everything sorted, to get a go-ahead, to get the windows fitted. Nine months from start.
Is this a private house or is it authority house?
Private house.
Private house.
Private house. The man I say is 80, the man that I inside there with, he's around 80 years of age. And I was cleaning the chimney inside in the house and there was a draft coming in the window. I said, how the fuck is he living here?
Where are these people's families? Do they have any family that could help?
I don't know. I haven't seen your woman, Dominic. You don't know. You're going to get a call off this man, like. You don't know any of their families. That's the thing about it, like.
Yeah.
And the neighbours, there's neighbours, they'll know. I was a few neighbours, they're farmers. So they won't know nothing about the man. I said they wouldn't even know if he's living there.
So you're seeing a lot of poor living conditions.
Yeah, and with the grants, then, like, there's other people, then you go to the houses, the grants, I said you'd be getting the grants here for the windows. They couldn't afford to pay the money up front. If you're going for the grant, right, you have to pay the money up front, and then they pay you. So where are people going to get 10 or 12,000 quid?
I understand, yeah.
Right, would you think the government come along here, and you go in, all the windows are for Larry windows or whoever, like, and then the government say, we'll pay you, get the few wob off that crowd, we pay the rest.
I understand. Or put a lien on the property for when it's eventually sold. You know.
No. If they're entitled to a grant, well, yeah, they go on to the window group and say, right, you're doing their windows, we'll pay you the 9,000 quid or whatever it is, and leave the customer pay the 1,000 or 2,000 whatever it is.
Yeah, and try being closer to no cost.
Yeah, but the man that was telling me it took him 9 months, Mick, right? It took him 9 months to get the go-ahead, right, get the windows. But there's the only thing, this, you know, I said to them, if there's money there, you get it. And he was paying 11,500 up front for his windows. And he was entitled to a grant.
Yep.
Well, no, if it's there.
No older person, or very few, would be able to come up with that up front.
If I put a challenge to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let you get a person that need windows and fill up the form for them and see how long it would take you to do the forms for that person.
Massive red tape, I'd say, is it?
Yeah, and see how long it would take to get the windows in. 9 months to talk to this man, and he's a fairly smart man, he's educated, like, you know? And it took him 9 months to get the go-ahead. So I can imagine an elderly person that know nothing about computers or anything like that, they never get it done.
But I wonder, is there an elderly person's advocate for the likes of Paddy O'Brien, for instance, who could look in and on various situations, could be contacted, maybe call out to somebody, see how bad the situation is, and have a direct line into the grant application system whereby he vouches that this is somebody in dire need. They're living in damp, cold, freezing conditions. It's almost uninhabitable or whatever. Get the grant paid out.
Yeah, I was in the house last week and I tell him, oh, the windows are dire. I said, no, they're dire. These windows badly need to be run for this man.
Okay, and just in case any of our listeners think that, you know, you're making any of this up, tell me about the person who was broken into.
It's the same person.
Same person.
He's broken into, and the windows are not replaced. The window's not replaced. It's just there's a board up in his window.
But what did the intruders take?
I say there wouldn't be much there to take. Yeah. Mickey's an elderly man, like, do you know what I mean?
So even the thieves realised there's no point stealing from this man. He has nothing.
A lovely man. He's a very, very nice man. I was trying to tell him about the grants. And I go out the door and I said, fuck it, I'd have to really make a call about this, like, you know?
Yeah.
You worry about him. Like, I was only cleaning the chimney and then he was freezing inside the house. I swear to God.
And
I had to pull the curtain because he had no bulb in. And I pulled the curtain and then I see the stair at the window. I said, Jesus, look at this.
Yeah, maybe we should try to track down family here. And they should get on board. They should get on the case. But, you know, he can have a very safe chimney. He can be well swept by you and put a fortune into lighting a fire, but it's going out the window.
What is that? It's definitely, he is definitely not staying there. I don't know, but that's the end, like, there was no rain. Can you imagine if it was raining? The rain is beating in his window, like. Well, all the windows in the house have to be done, like, you know. But, like, it's a private house. I know, but someone else should be there to help the man and sort it out for him, like, you know.
Yeah.
The grants, the farms, they're killing people. There should be someone there inside the county hall or the city hall for an elderly people or people that can't fill up the farms. They should be there to fill up the farms for them to help the people.
Wouldn't that be an ideal world?
Yeah, it is, but it's all computerised now. And I tell you, be quite honest, I wouldn't be able to go on the computer myself because I never use the computer myself. That's me straight. But there should be something done there, and especially for someone to pay 11,000 quid, man, he's 75 years, I say, roughly. It could be anywhere near 80 years of age. Pay 10 or 11,000 quid up front and then try to get the money back.
And try to claim it back, yeah. I understand. We'll do our best to get this case in front of Paddy O'Brien. We're mindful of GDPR issues as well and respecting people's privacy. But Paddy from the over 60s might do us a favour and look into it. So we'll see what can be done. But I do take your point. In an ideal world, and we're far from it, there should be an elderly person's advocate inside the city hall or county hall or wherever to deal with these issues. Get an inspection done. Know that this person is in dire need of it. Get the grant approved. come to some arrangement with the window companies. Maybe a preferred window company, could do a higher purchase agreement over a number of years. The other side of it, and it's very stark, you can be sure if that old person passes on, there'll be plenty of family in the mix trying to take possession of the house. So
when just money, just 20 people are only afterwards, and when you're buying, they'll be your own. Oh, God, I loved them a long time.
Yeah, so,
Jesus.
You know, if the house is deemed to be uninhabitable, there could be a penalty on the family there, and that might be the stick rather than the carrot that's needed.
Yeah, what should be done with the windows anyway? It helped a lot of people straight away. It gets someone to do the falls from. They could say, go to this company, we'll pay the grant money to them, and you'll come up with the balance. They could walk to the credit union then. The man that got delivering windows, Mick, I was at him when he got the windows. I'm a friend of his. But he only paid about 2,500 quid for all his windows. He got a grant about 8,500.
Yeah.
So,
and it transformed the house, I'd say, did it?
Unbelievable. But if that man then, right, all he had to do is just come up with 2,500. He could get a loan off of someone. The credit union or something, all you have to do is pay 2,500 instead of coming up with 11,000 or 12,000.
Yeah, and you, of course you're putting about 10 grand on the value of the house for any future owner, so it makes perfect sense.
Well, you're that age, so you won't be worrying about the value of the house. It's that, like, do you know what I mean? Do you know?
All right, what's the cost of a bag of coal these days?
Oh, McBuy for you, it's cash, all right.
Johnny Cash.
I tell you now, I tell you now, the coal has gone up 30 euros a ton since the 1st of May. And coming in October, there's 2 grand supposed to go on to our two carbon taxes,
yeah.
Supposed to go on to it, and they reckon the supplier is going to put up again. So if I was peeping, I stock up during the summer because God only knows what the price is going to be.
Yeah, but I know people are stocking up on oil already for the winter, even though Mr. Trump has just said that he hopes for a resolution on the Strait of Hormuz in about the next 2 days. In other words, before his birthday and before the World Cup starts.
Yeah, but we're higher than that for the last 90 days.
Oh, I know.
10 days. Look at Putin. How long did he say he'd have 7 days? He's gone on 3 or 4 years. they're all the wacky backer, he said, or something.
All right. Thanks a million. Some people offended by your language. I'll apologise on your behalf, okay?
Oh, sorry about that.
I know what happens.
So,
all the best, Kieran. Bye-bye. Kieran Gould. Mick, ring City Hall, and they'll send someone out to do everything. The window company will do everything, including the paperwork, says a texter. Well, we'll get that information to Kieran. They did it for my parents, said this texter. Ring City Hall, they'll send someone out to do everything. It's a private house now, bear in mind. The window company will do everything, including the paperwork. They did it for my parents. Now, the show often gets so busy that we don't get to things, and I neglected to mention this yesterday, but we are, of course, giving away summer family passes every day for the rest of the summer. And this week we feature Cork City bus tours. And we were so busy with the childcare issues yesterday that we didn't get to give one away. So we'll give away two today, okay? Cork City bus tours is this week's feature. You can see the very best of Cork City and feel the wind in your hair, if you had any hair, from the open top deck of our bright red city tour bus. Enjoy panoramic views from the top deck. We'll drive through the historic streets of Cork, including the beautiful Victorian Quarter. And as you travel along Cork's famous St. Patrick's Quay and cross the mighty River Lee on its many distinct bridges, from the sacred sites of the Shandon Cathedral and St. Finbar's Cathedral to the more open-air pleasures of Fitzgerald Park and the UCC campus, you'll experience every part of Cork City. From the open top deck of the bus, you'll also see Cork's history, both past and present. It's, of course, a city whose story is told on its streets, and there's no better way to spend your time when visiting Cork. So we'll pick a caller and we'll open our lines towards the end of the programme, but we'll pick a caller as well. Best caller of the day. We'll give away summer family passes. This week we're featuring Cork City bus tours.
Get on to Prenderville.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prenderville Show on Red FM.
And by phone on 0818 104 106. Good morning from the Neil Prenderville Show. And good morning to Anne. Hello, Anne. Are you there? Okay, well, just go to some of the texts then. Back to childcare. Getting quoted 500 euros a week for childcare in West Cork because nobody's registered for the National Childcare Scheme. Mick, can we address the elephant in the room, please? There should be no need for childcare One income should be enough and one parent can stay at home then raising the family, says Trevor. That caller should be an advocate for childminders. She speaks so much sense. She speaks about the children who are the most important thing. Childminders are only trying our best and we want to give the children a nice environment. This is absolutely outrageous. How can she, Michelle, claim a creche is the best option? The truth is creches institutionalise children. The best thing for a child is to be with the mother. After that, as similar as possible, a home environment. Just because you're qualified doesn't make you right for the role. And one more, I urge you to please out of respect for the childcare staff, parents and children, before any childcare provider opens their mouth, ask if they follow the regulations and hire competent staff, because childcare staff are worn out from trying to do their jobs properly and working for providers who have zero respect for staff and children. So stuff from across the board there. John, good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm good. How are things, John?
Well, I'm absolutely horrified and shocked at the video, and you've seen it.
I've seen the video. It's quite harrowing watching. There are various reports coming now. These are unconfirmed. That the victim who has been hospitalised, but there are varying other reports, unconfirmed, now surfacing on social media as well as to the as to his state of health, shall we say. What did you make of it?
I'd be surprised if he survived. I hope he does survive it, but I'd be very surprised if he did. This was an attempted beheading, obviously. Like, I mean, you can see what went on. This guy was hand up in the air after starting the beheading process, and he shouting some kind of a slogan and then continuing on to go cutting again. Now, the people, I don't know, I didn't get in the bell faster, but at least they did eventually. But the guy with the holly came up and he whacked the head off of the colored guy. So, look, this is, I can see absolute riot in Belfast tonight over this sake. I mean, but I'm afraid of this thing will engulf the whole country because everyone is talking about it, Mick, right? I know several people now, both my age now and younger now, who are now when they're socialising in Cork, they're carrying
a knife.
Yeah, well, they're carrying, let's put it that way. Because they don't feel safe and they said, at least I have a chance if I'm attacked. And it's all known to the state of fear that people think that there are people walking amongst us now with no mental health checks, no criminality background under them. They're coming down over the border. They reckon there could be 100 a week, if not more, coming over the border on buses and taxis because there is no border anymore. Nobody knows, even Helen McEntee, when she was asked, when she was pushed by Grip Media. I mean, she's admitted openly as the Minister of Justice, Mick, that she hadn't a clue how many people are coming over the border. In fact, she hadn't a clue how many people were even in the country illegally that don't know. And the likes of Micheál Martin and Harris and the rest of them, right, they are sacrificing the Irish people, both north and south. It's all the one island to me, right, north and northern, southern Ireland, right? But, I mean, you had the creche stabbings in Dublin. You had the two dead lads up in Sligo, the two gay lads. This guy was trawling the internet looking for gay men to kill them. He disemboweled them while they were alive and beheaded them, right? You had Ashley Murphy, stabbed 12 times in the neck, even though the media said that she was strangled for the sanitised version because they didn't want a riot, but the riot came anyway. And what I'm afraid of, Mick, is that people that are on my road now, coloured people, Chinese people, Indian people, that they are going to...
They're going to get the brunt of this.
They get the brunt of this because you'll have people pointing the fingers and just saying, oh, there's another one of them. But they're not another one. They're just people like you and me, came here, raised their families, they're working hard, they're paying their taxes the whole lot, and that's the danger that some innocent person is going to lose their life.
John, I don't think any Irish person, no matter what your political sensibility, has any issue with legal immigration as long as somebody's coming here and they're supporting the economy and paying their taxes. Unfortunately, we seem to be going to a place with knives that America has reached long ago with guns. And I'd ask you the question, why would anyone carry going into town with no intention of using it? You can use the argument, I need it for my own protection. But were you ever in a knife fight? How are you going to protect yourself? And you're also assuming, I'm bringing it because I might get attacked with a knife. Is that what society is coming to?
Well, that's the problem. I mean, and I blame the politicians for that. I blame the open borders. They're denying, and let's be honest, the people that are really missing off the pitch here is the main opposition party. We have no opposition at the moment. Sinn Féin are not the opposition. They are not standing up for their... That's what you do, Mick, when you're in an opposition. You stand for the people. If you see the government are messing up in any way, you stand for the people as the main opposition. But at the moment, Sinn Féin are missing off the pitch.
Yeah, Independent Ireland seem to be doing a better job than Sinn Féin at the moment. But Sinn Féin got that message in the last round of voting, didn't they?
They did. And I guarantee you, when the next election comes, I think that's goodbye, Mary Lou, because I think that day has come and gone now, because they have let the people down. They were the same in Dublin, in Coolock, with the riots over the race riots again, and there'll be open borders. And Mary Lou did not stand with the people. And this has been noticed. And people are calling them traitors. Simple as that. That's the word. I know people, Nick, that were involved with Sinn Féin for donkey's years. And they will never vote for them again. Never.
Okay, so they've got a bit of work to do to claw that back. John, it's a horrific attack. You've watched it unfold, have you? I have as well. It's very sobering watching at that time of the morning. And if you do get the video, if you're listening and you haven't seen the video, and we've piqued your curiosity, you're better off not watching it, to be honest.
Well, this is a thing, if you're any bit sensitive. What it is doing, it's inciting hatred. And I'm afraid that innocent people could pay the price for this. And I don't want to see an innocent person, because of their colour or whatever, killed on the back of this lunatic last night, or the lunatics that we have done here, killing people like Aisling Murphy and the two gay lads and the child in Dublin and the question.
All right, John. We've covered that. Thanks once again for your call. There is some suggestion on social media that there will be a non-partisan protest in the north, in Belfast, tonight, that could possibly include Republicans and Unionists in a kind of a show of solidarity peacefully against the happenings of that horrific video. If you get it, just bear in mind, the video doing the rounds, and it is everywhere, is horrific. Be careful if you're watching that. Last week we were talking about a woman who was over and back from Poland claiming benefits, and it prompted Con to get in touch. Hi, Con.
Nick, how are you doing?
Good. Over and back on the old Ryanair train and claiming the benefits here, and taking or sending a lot of money home. What's your situation?
Well, the story with that is the old passports should be checked, you know, for the last time in, last time out. But I think, as I said in my email, I was in transit back. I paid off a ship in the UK, and I did send you on a photograph, a picture of my it's a Bermudian shipping...
Oh, the Seaman's book.
Yes. And it's the exact same colour... As you might have seen it, same size. Obviously, on the front of it, it says Bermudian Seafarers Discharge Book. And coming to the airport, I just got in the queue. I had my man bag, pulled out this document, handed it to the guy behind the desk. He had a quick glance at it. But the funny part about it, Mick, the passport is in the back of it. Thanks very much. Stay true.
Okay. Maybe he was respectful of the fact that you were plying your trade at sea. Maybe they recognised you or something, but they didn't look at your passport, no?
Well, I didn't show him my passport. I got it mixed up. I had my passport and that book in my man bag, and I picked out the wrong one and just gave it to him. And, look, it could be that, but the law of the land is it is not actually as a travel document.
Okay, how many years ago was this?
About 5 years ago.
Okay, one of the first in Cork to have a man bag, though.
Well, here's no man bags are nearly mandatory now, Mick.
I know. Well, a certain broadcaster here has been sporting one for about 20 years, just some slagging at the start, but now they've become very popular, haven't they?
Well, they're better than a rucksack, you know.
Yeah, and you can keep them to the front. You can even keep your hand on them in crowds. It does protect your belongings.
Nick, actually, they're very protective of any bits and pieces you have in the bag. You can swing it around, and it's a safer way to mind your whatever you've got in the bag. You know, and they're not big.
Yeah, I'll tell you a funny story along the same lines, Con. About 25, maybe 30 years ago, we were on a family holiday in Lanzarote. Went out for breakfast, had a credit card or whatever, paid for the breakfast, came home. Back to the apartment we were, you know, renting, and saw on the flat roof, coming down from the flat roof, two footprints. on the white paint. And I said, no, that's suspicious. Went in and my wallet was gone. My passport was gone. Any cash we had for the holiday was gone. Luckily, I had the credit card, okay? So went to the Guardia Civil and reported same. So now we're down to one credit card, no passport to get home. I had at the time an American green card. Imagine that. I could have had the choice to go and live in America. And because of, you never know, maybe the green card is being used in America. Maybe I'm a mass murderer over there. Who knows? But everything gone. And it took the bones of 3 days of a 7-day holiday with the Guardia Civil, language difficulties and everything, to get a stamped piece of paper to say that I was Mick Mulcahy, okay?
Yeah.
So came to passport control, and I was whipping out my piece of paper, so proud to have it. The member of Angarda Síochána behind the desk was a friend of mine, Jim Nine. Hello, Mick, in you go. After 3 days.
Yeah. But Mick, I'm not trying to better that story. I was in transit through the Panama Canal in a place called Cristobal.
That's a better story already.
I got robbed, and I wasn't too keen in giving my money over. I put up a bit of a battle, but then I had a knife put to my throat, shiny stainless steel knife, and I was quite pleased to let him take my watch and take my few dollars.
Okay, so that, and life is more important.
Yeah, but that's how life was. But look, the man actually in Cork, he might have known me, and some did know me because I was a fairly frequent, I was frequently transiting through it anyway, you know, Mick.
Mm-hmm. Never done it, love to do it.
Sorry?
I've never done that. I had had the chance last year, but other things came up that I couldn't do it. But Con, it's great to talk to you. Have you been all over the world at sea?
I've done a bit of it, Mick, yeah. It's all finished now. I can only look at it on the globe, you know, but never mind, it's been done. And I got through it, and your life was interesting. Great to hear you on the air again, Mick.
Thanks, Con. Thank you very much. Good morning to you. Thanks very much. Some texts coming in on 0868 104 106. Mick, how much is Micheál Martin costing the taxpayers with his daily unnecessary trips on the taxpayers' jet and being driven around the country just to put his name on plaques, all while he's destroying the country with open borders and made this country so unsafe, says a texter. On that attack, good morning, Mick. Are you going to talk about the attempted beheading by an illegal migrant last night? I've seen the video and it's absolutely horrendous. Every politician in Ireland that supports this immigration policy has the blood of every man and woman that has been killed by illegal migrants directly on their hands. With the migration pact to be passed in 3 days, this is the only topic that should be discussed over the coming days. They all have to be sent back for the sake of our children and the preservation of Ireland, says Tig. Yeah, well, we did touch on it, and I know the Migration Pact is coming up for ratification. I'm sure we'll get more on that during the week as it comes closer. On domestic abuse, I put up with 20 years. My advice is to get help. They are just bullies. Don't waste all this time that you should be living happily. And on City Hall, and we'll talk about this a little later in the programme. Hi, Mick, you're right about City Hall. They don't tell people about anything they're entitled to. It's the same with older people, who often don't know what they're entitled to. Most of us do not know how to go online or use email because we were not educated like people are today. It has to be somebody's job. Let us know by sending us letters. Thank you, Mick, and I love listening to your show, says Teresa. Get in touch 0818 104 106 by phone or by text, SMS or voicemail on WhatsApp 0868 104 106.
Get on to Prenderville.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prenderville Show on Red FM.
Just turned 10:45. Good morning with the Neil Prenderville Show being brought to you by Mick Mulcahy as Neil is on holidays. Now, the Before We Die campaign is a family-led initiative in Ireland advocating for adults with intellectual disabilities who are at risk of being left without housing or care when their elderly parents pass away or can no longer look after them. We touched this morning on the very stark statistics of people in 24-hour caring mode and what they're putting up with and what they're sacrificing to do it. But let's not forget that more than 2,000 adults with intellectual disabilities in Ireland are still living with parents aged over 70. And that does not augur well for the future. Sinead McGrath has been representing many parents in Cork particularly who are fighting to get the Before We Die campaign over the line. She joins us again. I know you've updated Neil on a number of occasions with this. Good morning, Sinead.
Good morning, Mick. How are you? Thanks for the opportunity this morning.
You're more than welcome. You have twin adult sons, Lee and Alex, and they have intellectual challenges.
That's right. So I suppose I began my progress on my process on this for the social housing application forms and everything like that back in about 2017. That's when my sons turned, they were coming up to age 18 and they had stated that they want to live independently. So they know, and I obviously know because we talk about it a lot at home, that they will need support in place for them to live independently. So I started with another two parents here in Cork going about what the process was to get them on the social housing application and to get on that list, because we were advised by a CEO of the service provider at the time that this is with the route to go, that they need to have their name on the social housing application and to access any support, and everything will be provided within their community. If it was only that simple. It's been a long, lengthy process, to be honest, and I don't know where the lack of communication broke down, but nobody told parents in general across all service providers. I don't know if it's the service providers or the HSD or whose responsibility, but nobody told parents. So they should have been told this since 2017 and before, maybe, that their name needs to be on the social housing list. So what we're finding in the campaign now is we're coming across a lot of elderly parents. You gave the stats there, their nationwide stats. In Cork alone, we have 178 adults, parents over the age of 70 in Cork County. And in Cork City, we have 128. They're all over the age of 70, still caring for their adult sons or daughters at home. So
you're looking at about 300 parents across Cork.
300 parents across Cork. Now, we've managed to come across and we're reaching out and we're going to do a social media, because obviously those parents at that age group would be priority for the Before We Die campaign, because they're the ones, I suppose, facing the crisis sooner. We would have parents in their 90s and their 80s also reaching out to us. So we are going to try and reach those and help them go through the application process. But we are encouraging people to reach out to their service providers and get the help that's required with the social housing application form, and they can help them with that process. Now, I suppose what we're finding with the campaign, and we've made some progress to date in terms of meeting government officials, and we have more meetings coming up. Our committee-based members, Tony Murray, along with our other committee, now will be meeting with Emer Higgins again. They're going to be meeting with Norma Foley. They're going to be meeting with Simon Harris again. Those ministers, again, we're meeting first time with Simon Harris, and we have requested a second meeting with the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin. He met us in Cork some months ago, so we're hoping to meet him again. So we're making kind of progress, but I suppose the biggest progress I can see, and we can all see on the committee, is the opening up for the family conversations that's happening in people's homes. And the older parents, in terms of the 70 and the 80-year-olds, they're reaching out. People are having the family conversations at home about what will happen to this person with the intellectual disability that they love and care for every day. And people are starting to talk about it. They're reaching out to us. People are talking amongst themselves and we are sharing information. So we have like the Cork Support WhatsApp group set up, as well as Before We Die All. There's loads of different channels you can communicate with the committee and the campaign. But in Cork alone, we have nearly 300 members on that Cork WhatsApp support group. And it's where we share information about how to go, just say, for instance, about getting a social worker who you will need to fill in part of the medical form for the social housing application. But I suppose the biggest changes we're seeing is within the families, and people are talking out. They're talking about it more. And
I can only imagine the worry that must be on the shoulders of the parents who've given literally a career's length of 24-hour care in their own homes.
Well, it's a lifelong.
Yeah, since the children were born, essentially. Lifelong from then. And I don't mean to be, you know, making your mission seem impossible. It's a very lofty ideal and a very noble mission. In fact, you want every son and daughter with an intellectual disability in Ireland to have a safe and appropriate, supported home in their community before their parents are gone. You're doing this, however, in the middle of the most acute housing crisis this nation has ever undergone. And while we have record numbers of homeless people, Do you think you deserve and do you think you'll get the appropriate attention, the construction and the investment that...
Well, yeah, well, it's absolutely their human right. It's
absolutely, 100%, right, yes.
With the intellectual disability. And I suppose, again, in Cork, where we have kind of made a bit of extreme progress, actually, it's the best progress around the country with all the local authorities. We've met with Cork City Council, Cork County Council, sat down going through the application process. They've now both actually set aside a liaison person, a direct person that we can liaise with in both Cork City and Cork County. That's the first around the country. So that is progress in itself. If we can replicate what we're doing here in Cork around the country, that would be absolutely amazing. I do think we are going to continue to fight with it. We'll continue to tell and ask parents. And we actually have a lot of siblings as well who care for an adult sister or brother with an intellectual disability. So we're asking everybody to continue to lobby their TDs. We will continue, obviously, as part of the committee. We continue our lobbying, but we are reaching out to all families and asking them to lobby their TDs and their local councillors.
Okay, this is no small issue. It's no small issue because you had a meeting in May in the Silver Springs Hotel and 200 families showed up.
There was 400 families showed up.
400?
Yeah, so we had a meeting on the 21st of May. It was a hugely successful meeting. We originally booked that room for 50 people. We had to continue to change and amend the booking. We ended up with over 350 seats booked completely, and then we had a lot of people turn up who at the end of the room was full. So we had nearly 400 people, including some of the service providers. We had some local TDs, we had some local councillors, we had mostly families. And I suppose while that was a hugely successful event, we have families still reaching out to us after the event, and it was obviously very overwhelming because they weren't aware how stark the situation was until we gave them, like, even those figures we got for the 178 people in Cork County over 70 and the 120-odd in Cork City. It was one of our committee members, Sarah, did her own research and she obtained that from the local census. I mean, that information has been sitting there with the HSE or nobody else looking for it, and it's there, available. So that's where we're doing our own research and we're getting our own figures, and that's how we can make progress that way.
You're very positive, Sinead. You're very hopeful.
I have to remain hopeful, and I do. And do you know what? It was giving hope to the elderly parents that feel so isolated and alone. Because just a typical, like, example, like, I'm going off today now with my two boys. We've Special Olympics golf, but I'm still in the situation at this time in my life that I can still drop and collect them and do that with them, so they're not missing out. But the older parents, what we're hearing from them is that their adult son or daughter, who's now in their 40s and 50s, are ending up more isolated and alone, and they, because the elderly parents are unable anymore to drop them or bring them or collect them, or so that they've no social interaction really, and they basically have their social life and their actual, I suppose, they're regressing then because they're not mixing with people, and the guilt then attached with that is coming from the older parent. I mean, there should be no guilt attached when you're after getting to like that age and minding or looking after.
And when you've done your level best all your life, what other kind of stories are you hearing from Cork families?
They're the type of stories that we're hearing, that they feel very isolated, and things now like that they're no longer able to drive the elderly parents, so they can't. The person with the intellectual disability then, I suppose their life is kind of, what would you say, it's disintegrating for one further. I can't.
It's a very unfair way to go through your autumn years, isn't it? Having given a lifetime to the betterment of your children, you know, that now physically or, you know, for whatever reason, you can't travel, you may not be able to drive, yeah, your eyesight might be going, but the worries are increasing. But the worries are always increasing. Yeah.
You don't have the same stamina. Do you know what I mean? You don't, absolutely. And they've given their level best their whole life, loved and cared for their person in their life with the intellectual disability, and now to go give that level of care to someone you love so much and that level of support to get to the end of your life and not know what's around the corner.
And moving into a situation where you may need care yourself as an elderly person.
Absolutely.
Must be a worry as well.
And we have lots of older parents, and not in their 70s, now even younger, that would be sandwiched between caring for a spouse now and an older adult, someone with an intellectual disability, or between elderly parents themselves and their son or daughter. Do you know? So, yeah.
Sinead, how can people get in touch?
There's we have a website, we have a Facebook page on Instagram. It's all beforewedie.com. We have a public page on Facebook. You'll find us that way. Instagram. There's an email for us. If you're happy enough to share all our social media handles, I can send them on to you there.
Okay.
And people can reach us that way. They can take my number if it's anyone locally in Cork and they want to get on that local Cork WhatsApp group. They're all more than welcome to join that. It's where we share information and share municipal services and stuff like that. But I suppose it's just to reach out and tell people through the campaign what we're finding. They're no longer alone.
Okay.
They're sharing their experience now with people who understand because we're all in the exact same boat. Some
Sinead, thanks for the hope. Thanks for the positivity.
Thank you.
Thanks for the energy and thanks for coming on.
Thanks again for the opportunity, Mick. Have a good day now.
You
too. Bye.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
The Neil Prendeville Show. Get in touch 0818 104 106 by phone. 0868 104 106 by text. And news at 11 is next.
Now that Wendy's has these new biggie deals, everyone in the family can get what they're craving, from Nugs to JBCs. The parental units can get an $8 biggie bundle, the eldest who think they're so grown can get a $6 biggie bag, and the little one who can do no wrong can get a $4 biggie bites. You know, assuming they have a credit card. No, I'm kidding. We take cash too. $4, $6, and $8 biggie deals for the whole family. Only at Wendy's.
Price and participation may vary. Single items at regular price. Prices may be higher in Alaska, California, and Hawaii.